Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. You know, I was listening to the intro, and never was that intro more appropriate than it is for my guest tonight. But if you're listening on Monday night on either 95.9 or 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, we are live. We're glad that you're with us. If you're a regular listener, thanks for coming back. If you're new, we talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. If you are listening on Long Island, 103.9 Long Island's Talk Radio, it's Wednesday night. We hope you had a great day. And, of course, if it's Sunday morning, we're obviously on tape because even I don't get up that early. We're on those three stations. We're on iHeartRadio. You can even shout to Alexa and Echo, and you can find us. So many ways to reach us. You know, I can't be happier to bring to you tonight my guest, who is one of the single most compassionate people I ever met. And to top it off, he's an amazing speaker. One of the most difficult conversations we ever have involves dying. As most people have figured out by now, none of us gets out of here alive. In that arena, one of the most misunderstood players in the conversation is hospice. Most people believe that hospice is only for the last 2 days of one's life. And trust me, nothing could be further from the truth. As I said, my guest tonight is an expert on the hospice dynamic, coupled with, as I said, being one of the most compassionate people I have ever met. Dr. Leonard Hawk is here, and he is the Chief Medical Officer of Palliative Medicine and Advanced Illness Management at TrustBridge Health. I'm going to tell you just a little bit more about him in a moment, but before I get to tonight's subject, I want to thank the Palm Beach County Bar Association for asking me to MC their View from the Bench last week. The View from the Bench event puts the judiciary and elder law, family, and probate attorneys together in a Q&A format that brings out the best in knowledge share. It's an unbelievable group of people who work towards finding ways to serve the needs of our community. And I just want to say bravo to all involved and thank them once again for asking me to MC for the third year in a row. They can't find anybody else to do it. I also want to say that my company does a monthly newsletter, and this month's feature, if you're not on my mailing list, you should be, is about support groups. I'm a huge believer in support groups, and I conduct one for people living with family members who have Alzheimer's disease and dementia. I'm going to be doing that again this week at Pacifica Senior Living at 2 o'clock on Thursday there in Greenlawn. I encourage you, if you want to come, come on in. There's no reservation required. We'd love to see you. If you feel like talking about your situation, a support group might be helpful. I have no doubt that my guest tonight would be a big fan of support groups, and I'm going to say with 100% certainty that he has helped many people over the years through bereavement groups that I'm sure he's been involved in. Dr. Leonard Hawk is here, and I feel like a groupie telling you how excited I am to have him here. His career has covered so much it would be impossible to cover it all. So I'm just going to say welcome, Dr. Hawk.
Pleasure to be here.
So you know, before the show, we were going through so many subjects that we wanted to talk about tonight, and you got really excited about one topic, so I'm going to start differently than I said we were going to start. Your background is primarily as a geriatrician. You have great stories about your time as a geriatrician. You've done so much work for people who need it as they go through the aging process. Why can't we find anybody to enter that field?
Well, geriatrics should be a growing field because there are more of us getting older every day, and we're living longer. So the population is getting bigger for two reasons. One, more of us entering the boomers that you mentioned earlier, and then we're living longer. And that's a good thing, but how we live is the important thing. Scott, I started my career as an intensivist, as a medical director of an intensive care unit, and it was clear to me that the sickest of the sick people in the ICU were the older people. It was the rare 22-year-old with diabetic ketoacidosis or the 44-year-old with a blood clot, but it was the common 77-year-old with pneumonia, heart failure, kidney trouble, liver trouble, stroke, and those geriatric-related syndromes. So I became interested in geriatrics. It was a great field to go into because there's so many people. The problem today is that geriatrics, two things are wrong with geriatrics today for young doctors or even mid-career doctors to go into. One, and doctors think about this, is reimbursement. When you take care of a general population, you're taking care of people that have insurance, that have all sorts of payer sources, and so you get paid an average amount. But when you go into geriatrics, you're dealing with almost exclusively Medicare. So your salary drops by 10% right, if you choose to specialize in geriatrics. And the other problem is there's just not enough geriatric-wise support out in the medical community. You know, organizations and companies like yours allow people to be comfortable in their home for as long as is possible. So good for you for that. But in the medical community, other physicians often treat the geriatric patient like a regular adult patient, and they have their own set of issues, physiology, and difficulties. It's just hard to go into geriatrics these days.
And as the need grows and the shortage of practitioners also grows, this is going to become ever more problematic as time goes on.
Well, absolutely, but not just for geriatricians. I'm fortunate enough to be on a Florida healthcare workforce, and they're focusing right now on nurses. You know, in our larger cities around us, we usually have a skill pool of highly qualified nurses, but move even to the suburbs or out to rural Florida, or sometimes in the very inside of urban cities in Florida, and the skill pool of qualified nurses is dwindling. You know, the average age of nurses, you would think all these handsome and beautiful young people who go into nursing right, school would be all around us, but the average age of a nurse is about 55. Nursing is a hard career. By the time they get to 56, they're exhausted. So we're just begging nurses not to retire nowadays. Right. So for nurses, for geriatricians, we are in need, and we're looking to how to fill that need.
And that dynamic crosses, frankly, into my business. I never talk about my business on the show, and I'm not going to, but that's true of a growing shortage about home care workers across the country that is really troubling. We simply can't meet the need, which leads us to, because we talked about it, I didn't go in great length into your bio, but for those who don't know, you were chief medical officer of Hospice by the Sea before becoming chief medical officer for palliative medicine and advanced illness management at TrustBridge. For those who don't know, TrustBridge was formed by a merger of Hospice by the Sea and Hospice of Palm Beach County, and that happened, I guess, back in 2014. People have massive misunderstanding about hospice. And so maybe we can, just at the 30,000-foot level, talk about hospice and its place in the dynamic of getting older and
so dying. There's one perception of hospice. We don't want it.
Right.
I mean, hospice, the connotation is death and dying. It's morbid. Right. Why would anybody work there? Why would you ever put your mother there? Who would want to go there? So I speak frequently, several times a week, locally, statewide, nationally, and a board-certified hospice physician for many years now. And when I talk about hospice, I do not talk about hospice, because just the word hospice turned people in your radio audience right now right, saying, what is this about?
Right.
Hospice is not about the end of your life. Hospice is about the rest of your life. When you've been a great patient and you followed instructions, when you didn't want the diagnosis, when you didn't want your loved one to have that condition, you fought and you went to the hospital and you kept every appointment that you should, and hopefully you took your medications right. But when wellness and cure and recovery was not possible, when you did everything you could, when you bounced back as many times as you could, and you could not get well again, then you would want, I think, to have the kind of care you would want for the rest of your life. In fact, I say about hospice, it is the best care that you never wanted.
Right.
Because you never wanted to get sick enough to need that kind of care. You never wanted your family member to get sick enough. But when they get so sick that they can't get well anymore, no matter what they've done, what kind of care do they want? They want the best care they can get. Where do they want it? Usually in their home. Who do they want around them? Usually their family, maybe their dog, which is good
right.
family
no,
often.
Right.
They want to be
therapy for sure.
They want to be comfortable. And they want to live life the rest of their life the way they want to. So I don't talk about end-of-life care or hospice care. I talk about rest-of-your-life care the way you would want it. And any hospice worth its salt, and Trustbridge is one of the best, we look at our care plan is the patient, the person's wishes. If they want to be comfortable in their home, eating their food, that's what we do for them. We take care of them the rest of their life the way they want.
You know, it's amazing. In preparation for the show, you and I spoke last week, and we didn't realize it because we approach it from different perspectives. But I always think end of life is the time to celebrate your life. That it is that very moment in time where we should stop arguing about what you want. That should be a given. That we need to tell people that we need to be proactive in our end of life decisions so that we can live the best life possible as the end of life appears.
So you would advocate for any of us making our choices about how we want to live at the end of our life. I would call it the rest of our life.
Right.
But that is the same period of
right.
time. Just want to be affirmative. Well, you're exactly right for any individual. But if you ask your wife or your daughter or your family, what should I do? They love you. They advocate for you. They don't want to be burdened by making a give up or do nothing decision. And so they're going to say, Mom, we want everything for you. We want you to have all the care you can give. When in fact, that mother may say, I've done all that. I've done it twice. I've been in the hospital 3 times. I don't like being there. But families don't want to give up. They are not that one individual. And so built into these important life's decision to celebrate life, as you say you would want to do, I agree with you. But families want you to keep on living no matter what. And so it's back to the hospital time and time again. It's back to the doctor's office, even when there's no cure or recovery seen.
So you and I talked about this years ago. We didn't talk about it in anticipation of tonight. But you just reminded me in this conversation. You know, I want to talk about family dysfunction or family disagreement. It's not necessarily dysfunction because it's all for the right reason. But you gave a very important presentation a long time ago when I first got involved in the business, actually. And you talked about how eating is where this sometimes rears its ugly head, that eating is very social, that we all sit around the table. And for that reason, when mom and dad is near the end of their life, perhaps are in hospice and they no longer want to eat, that's a time that really can get challenging. I know I'm throwing you a curveball here. Can we talk about that?
No, that's what we do every day. And eating is one of the many myriad triggers that stimulates a conversation and discontent and a broken heart for the family. Scott, I hope you or people that you care about closely have never been really sick, but if even with the flu, when you're feeling just your worst and somebody brings you your favorite homemade something, you don't even want it in the room. When you feel sick, you don't want the smell, but it's your favorite.
That's true.
And why do they bring it to you? For 2 reasons. One, they love you, and food is a connection to love. And two, food is health. If you can't eat, you can't get well. So love and health are the connectors of food to that person. You know, when we get very sick, when we're younger and sick, when we get very old with geriatric conditions and get sick, our body doesn't call out and yearn for food and water. We don't have the physiologic body need to take food. And if we put food in our stomach, we can't digest it. We're too weak. We can't metabolize it. Our liver and our kidneys, they're spent. And so forcing food through IVs, through spoons and forks, through feeding tubes only makes a person who doesn't want to eat, who isn't hungry, it means they're very seriously ill, of course, it only makes them uncomfortable to be forced. But it breaks the family's heart to see that grandmother can't eat, and that when we bring her food, she clenches her teeth or turns her head. Is that a rejection of love? They interpret it that way, but absolutely not. It's one of the incredibly strong markers of life's decline at that precious, close to final days and weeks in their life.
So on that note, because it's very much analogous, and I can relate it to my mother-in-law in particular, who fell in her late 80s, broke a hip, and decided she was not going on. I've spoken about that on the show before. She decided that she was done, and she refused to do whatever it took for her to get better, and 3 weeks later, we buried her. Barbara Bush just recently made a similar decision that she was not willing to fight the fight, or not able, willing, or desirous of fighting the fight anymore. And a lot of that sparked a lot of controversial conversation. Isn't that kind of what we're talking about as it relates to food, but it could be other decisions as well?
I think that's exactly what the conversation is, not only ours, but out in the community with families all the time. So when your mother-in-law broke her hip and she decided she didn't want to go through anymore, did you and your wife and your family encourage her to exercise and rehab and eat better and take vitamins and get better?
Yeah,
because
until
we were
told
her.
To shut up.
Because
my mother-in-law was a strong woman.
Well, strong enough
right.
to tell you that it's her decision,
right.
not yours, because
right.
you were wanting her to have everything to recover and to live longer. She said, I've had enough of this. I want to be comfortable and live that life the way I want to. Barbara Bush, gosh, what a universally loved lady. You know, she had wrinkles in her face and never was ashamed of it, because she had beauty that was more than skin deep. Beauty for her family, for those children. She wanted to read and be successful. She was a talking role model, a walking the walk role model. Look, she was very sick with heart and lung disease, and she did do what the doctors told her, and she tried to fight back, and she, with her family's love and support, said one day, I had enough of doctors.
Yep.
You know, no more doctors. What I want is home, family, and comfort. And it wasn't but a few days until she took her last breath with peace and serenity the way she wanted.
And that is, of course, a large part of what hospice and Trustbridge in particular does. I want to talk about alternatives to hospice. We're going to talk about the Conversation Project. We're going to talk about Pulsed. I have so much more that I want to talk about. But there is some confusion in the term palliative care and hospice. Can you clear that up for us?
Well, I'll try. Give it a go. Well, palliative, the word actually means to comfort. So we're palliative specialists. So we assess uncomfortable symptoms, pain, shortness of breath, nausea, vomiting, anxiety, sadness, worry, seizures, delirium. We assess and then we palliate or comfort or tend to those symptoms. So palliative medicine is symptom assessment and management, comforting. So do you think if someone enters Trustbridge or any hospice that they're evaluated for their comfort? And of course, you're nodding yes, that they're evaluated continuously and they're comforted continuously, whether it's fluffing their pillow or giving them tapioca pudding or putting lotion on their skin or giving them powerful medications
right.
if they have
right.
pain, then all hospice patients get palliative care, symptom assessment and management. But you don't have to have a serious illness or a life-limiting condition to need and benefit from palliative care. A 13-year-old girl who had a serious burn, it's just terrible to think about that. Could she benefit from palliative care? And
of
she'll
course,
live
yeah.
for many decades.
Right.
How about a 45-year-old woman with advanced breast cancer? 25 years ago, she would have been a hospice candidate. Today, with genomic therapy and hormonal therapy, it is just a miracle. She might live to be 75, But would she be a candidate for palliative care not near the end of her life? Of course. You know, these young men that ride these motorcycles out on 95 at 175 miles an hour and scare the liver out of me when they go past.
You and me both.
You know, if they had an accident and didn't die, God bless them, they're going to have fractures and operations for months and years to come. They can benefit from palliative care, symptom assessment and management, but they don't have a life-limiting illness. You know, it's interesting, though, when we're called as a specialist by other doctors, it's rarely for symptom assessment and management in palliative care. It's often to say, Doc, you go have the conversation with the patient right. and family, called the breaking bad news conversation or the difficult discussion.
Right.
Because we advocate for exactly what you and I have been talking about previously. During this difficult time in the face of serious illness, what do you want for the care for the rest of your life? So their wishes become our care plan and direction for their care. It's an interesting place in medicine. Nobody advocates for patients more than the palliative hospice team.
It is an amazing conversation. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, and so is my mom. Here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. Dr. Hawk is the Chief Medical Officer of Palliative Medicine and Advanced Illness Management at TrustBridge Health. Prior to that, he was the Chief Medical Officer at Hospice by the Sea. We are talking about how you want to live the rest of your life. It's a really important conversation. We have so much more. I have a couple of misconceptions I want to ask Dr. Hawk about. I want to talk about alternatives to hospice. Excuse me. And we have some fun stories to tell you as well. I'm just going to remind Dr. Hawk of one later in the show, and now I got his mind working. Anyway, if you have questions for Dr. Hawk or for myself, you can call us. 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. If you're just tuning in, you're missing a wonderful show, or you missed the early part of it. I'm here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk, who's the Chief Medical Officer of Palliative Medicine at Trustbridge Health. I know Dr. Hawk for quite some time. He was the Chief Medical Officer at Hospice by the Sea prior to the merger with Palm Beach Hospice of Palm Beach County to form Trustbridge. We've been talking about so much. During the break, I said in kind of joking about where we were going to go next in the conversation, I said, I just want more time. And he said, it's funny that I should say that because he hears that all the time at in his role at hospice. So is that what you hear? People just want more time? Is that because they're afraid to die, or is that because of another reason?
You know who says they want more time is not so much the patient. They know they've fought the good fight. They know they've done everything they can, and they want to relax, be loved, be cared for, and be comfortable. Who wants more time is the loved ones around that person who just think that one more test, one more hospitalization, one different medicine, one miracle cure will make the difference. But every day in palliative medicine and at Trustbridge, we hear people saying, I just wish we had more time. Life is good. I don't see fear in their eyes. They have incredible strength and courage. I admire our patients and the families for loving them so much. So it's not fear. It's just that life is good. Life is love. Love is connections, and we enjoy that.
And I guess it is true that there is never a better, more meaningful time for people to connect on those emotions that you were just describing than during their time in hospice.
Well, they get to be validated by us. We regard their lives as very important and their personhood as very important. Their families are able to reflect and reminisce, and hopefully it's reminiscing about good parts of their life. And we encourage that. In fact, our social workers, our chaplaincy services, from priests to rabbis, shamans to ministers, validate them the way that they believe. And we talk about their life. We talk about their past life and the rest of their life.
And it is true that 90% of deaths are predictable. Only 10% are sudden. And so that is a great opportunity, is it not?
Well, it should be. It certainly should be. You know, you're right, and you and I talked about this years ago, and the statistics haven't changed very much. 10% of deaths are sudden deaths, and they fall into three big categories. One, accidents and injuries, I-95, falling off a roof, those kind of things. Unfortunately, some of those deaths are intentional. Homicide and suicide. And then there are the sudden medical deaths with blood clots and heart attacks where you drop in place and really there is no resuscitating you. But that's only 10%. 90% of deaths start with an illness, a condition, advanced age, frailty, and the decline through life is obvious, and the end of life becomes predictable. So there is that opportunity to talk about the kind of care you want to live long and well, successful aging. But then there is the opportunity to talk about what's important to you when time is limited, that very precious and should be serene time in your life. So it is an opportunity to talk about what do you want, and for Trustbridge, this is what we'll do to comfort you and validate your life and be there with you.
So, again, I have so many places to go with that. Most people don't realize that in order to be evaluated for hospice, what are the criteria for being evaluated for hospice and being admitted into hospice care?
Yeah, so hospice actually came from the word hospitality, to comfort, to take in, and to care for. And the first one started without any kind of insurance or Medicare benefit back in the early 70s. In 1983, Medicare saw the benefit that when people could not get healthier or recover from their illness with traditional care, what kind of care could they get for the rest of their life? And that was hospice care. Hospice is the most rich benefit in all of health care. Your medicines are paid for, your supplies are paid for, your hospital bed, your oxygen. Not only is it paid for, it's delivered to you. Right. I mean, you don't get that in any other kind of care. So hospice care was identified by Medicare on an arbitrary 6 months. Two doctors who would agree that more than likely this person, if their disease continued on, would take their last breath within 6 months. 6 months. Now, interestingly, the average length of stay is only 60 days, and the median length of stay, half of the patients a little longer, half of the patients a little shorter, is only about 14 days. And that's because even though decline is obvious and prognosis is clear, no one likes to come to hospice because they think that it will make them die. In fact, it will make them live a little bit longer, our studies show. But we now see that two doctors have to declare the patient eligible.
So I was going to take a break now, but I'm going to skip this break and keep going because I wanted I told you earlier that I gave a presentation about, well, I guess now it's close to 2 weeks, at an organization on the island called the Four Arts. And one of the questions was a woman who really was very angry at hospice. Her position was that all hospice did is take her mother off her medications, just doped her up to make her pain-free, and they didn't do anything to make her better. And that was a tough conversation I had with that woman.
But it's a common conversation. We hear that very frequently. Because medicine has advanced so much, we're living longer. And loved ones have the impression that the cholesterol pill, the blood pressure pill, the heart pill, the diabetic pill, the memory pill, the vitamin pill, the probiotic will all sustain and promote life. But in fact, when people get older, they can't metabolize all those medicines, and it's like putting medicine stew inside of your body, pill mixed with pill mixed with pill. And we actually, that is a diagnosis called polypharmacy. It is the medicines that make you sick. One of the things that we notice in hospice, and it's not rare, is that when we stop the cholesterol medicine or the heart rhythm medicine or the memory pill medicine, they again get restful, recuperative sleep. They're not just doped up on their medicines. Their bowels are able to move. They have a tiny bit of an appetite. And then when we replace those medicines that were once very beneficial but now a burden, and they are a burden, Scott, when we replace those with laxatives, with breathing medicines, with pain medicines like morphine, people actually are able to be comfortable for the first time in a long time. But the perception is, like that daughter that spoke with you, that she's angry because she thought the life-saving medicines were removed and that the end-of-life medicines were put in place. And it's quite the opposite of that. That would be a hospice myth. And when we sit down and we can talk one-on-one, we often are able to answer their concerns and questions about medication and polypharmacy. Sometimes it's called a pill burden. Right. So many pills, it's a burden. I have a saying since I was a young geriatrician that old age is not a drug deficiency disorder. Just because you get older, you don't need more prescriptions.
It's really fascinating. If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg. I'm here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. Of course, this is Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. If you're on the highway on 95 or on the turnpike, we hope that you are driving carefully, that you're listening carefully, but driving even more carefully. If you're home, we're glad that you're with us. 95.9 in Palm Beach, 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, 103.9 on Long Island. Wherever you are listening, we are glad that you are. Dr. Hawk, in addition to being the former chief medical officer of Hospice by the Sea and the current chief medical officer for palliative medicine at Trustbridge, is the immediate past president of the Florida Medical Directors Association. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about physicians' orders for life-sustaining treatment, which is different than your healthcare surrogate DNR. There's a lot of confusion about that. I want to also talk about the Conversation Project, which is critical, and then a local initiative called We Need to Talk Soon. All of these are subjects that we're going to cover in the time that we have left. But in the interim, if you have questions, we'll put ours aside and go to yours, and you can call us at 877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We're here every Monday night between 6 and 7 live on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches. We're on 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, 103.9 on Long Island. Here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. Dr. Hawk, in addition to being the Chief Medical Officer of Trustbridge Health's Palliative Medicine, he is the immediate past president of the Florida Medical Directors Association, and they're doing wonderful things, and is also kind of leading the state effort, kind of understates it. He is leading the state effort on a program called Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Most people think that if you have a healthcare surrogate form or if you have a DNR, that you're covered. And yet, as we said before, very few circumstances are sudden. Those people needing resuscitation are rare. And there are decisions that you may make when you are facing a medical circumstance or surgery or something like that. And I would like Dr. Hawk to explain what PULSED is, because I think it's the most important unknown initiative in the state.
You know, I think that starts, Scott, with the term advanced directives. In advance of a crisis in your life, an illness or a declining condition, you give directions to what kind of care you want and what kind of care you don't want, that you do want to go to the hospital or you don't, that you do want to have feeding tubes or you don't, that you would be on machines or you wouldn't, and whatever your choice is, if it's a informed choice and a quality decision, that should be your choice, and that would be your wishes and advance directives. And in those advance directives that we sometimes call a living will, I'm willing this to be my care while I'm living. Now, your will after death is a whole financial probate estate kind of thing, but the living will is why you're living. What kind of care do you want? There are some templates out there. We publish one here in Florida in many languages called Five Wishes. My Life Choices is another. And here in Florida, maybe not in Long Island, if you're at a tiki hut in the afternoon and you're having a cocktail and you decide that you do or don't want to go to the hospital if you get seriously ill, if you write that down, have two witnesses and date it, it becomes your advance directives. In Florida, we have a yellow form called the Do Not Resuscitate form. I wish it was called the Do Not Attempt Resuscitation, because the Do Not Resuscitate sounds like we either won't resuscitate or we absolutely will. And the fact is, when we try, most of the time, except on television, resuscitation is successful. In real life, it's rarely successful. And even if it's successful, the efforts to press on their chest and shock their heart, very few people get to the hospital, and if they get to the hospital, very few people survive. But it's an effort to save a life, and it's the right thing to do. A DNR, do not resuscitate, or a no code blue, is not a living will. That document is about your last heartbeat. When your heart stops, you either try to restart it or you leave it stopped. That's a DNR. A living will is about your next heartbeat and many more, you know, how you want to be cared for. So a DNR and a no-code blue is about your last heartbeat. Living wills and advanced directives are about your next heartbeats for as many as you have. One of the issues with advanced directives, living wills, my life choices, five wishes, is that they are your wishes. They are a list of your wishes. A doctor may sign them, but that just certifies that the doctor saw your wishes. PULSED is a physician's order for life-sustaining treatment. Life-sustaining treatment that you do want and treatment that you don't want. So what you want and what you don't want. And then the doctor signs it as a physician's order. And that's what distinguishes POLST, Physician Order for Life-Sustaining Therapy, from all of the other documents. Now, we've had a couple of national authorities here in Florida, Dr. Ken Brummel-Smith and Professor Marshall Kapp, an attorney, who have started POLST in other states and came to Florida State University to advocate for POLST here. And they have. They've done an incredible job. Both of them are retired, and they were looking for a home to continue the legislative effort for POLST. And the Florida Medical Director Association, when I was the president, I'm immediate past president, took that on as the home, and I took it on as a mission in Florida. So we are advocating to promote the wishes of every Florida citizen to have what they want and what they don't want when they face a serious illness and have that advocated by a physician as an order.
Excuse me. Why can't we get that through the legislature?
Well, you would think that it would be pretty clear. Most people would support, look, if they're well-informed and they haven't been coerced and this is what they want or what they don't want, and POLST doesn't direct people toward a choice, they allow them to make a choice about their care when they face serious illness. So one of the issues is that it is difficult in any state legislature to pass a bill. You're right. Going to have proponents and opponents for that, and there are many levels. I'm learning about this. There are financial implications. Where would this fit in the Florida state budget? There are right-to-life people who believe that maybe POLST does push instead of allow people into decisions. It absolutely does not. There may be religious or ethnic proponents and opponents to that. We're not finding that opposition in Florida. We're finding that if a Florida citizen wants to make a quality choice about how they live, then they should be able to make it. So we're actually finding lots of support to move this legislation forward.
You know, I actually took advantage of POLST myself. I had complex spine surgery many years ago, and a fellow that you're very familiar with who has been on the show, Dr. Stuart Bagatelle, who was instrumental. I met him through his talking about POLST a few years ago. Stuart helped me write my POLST order, which was that I don't do vegetable well. I actually wrote those words. I knew that with the surgery that I was facing, the likelihood of my coming out with long-term complications was minimal. But were they to be there, they weren't nil, they were minimal. I did not want to live on life support. I gave my family pretty clear instructions, and I had a physician's order now that told the hospital what I expected. I was a little surprised that the hospital was not yet on the program. I don't know if that's changing or not, but if I'm sure you're doing everything you can to make that change. This is around the country. There are states that which this is by law. I believe it's Oregon or Washington that it's required for every assisted living resident to have a POLST. In other parts of the country, it's called MULST. This is something that's very necessary, that's really, really important, and we need more advocacy on this, don't we?
I think advanced directives are looked at by families and loved ones, much like hospice is looked at. Well, why would you fill that out? That's about a bad time in your life. We don't want to think about that. We're not ready for that, Mom. We don't want to go there, Dad. And I believe that is the opinion. That's opinions that people bring to me. Well, I just don't even want to think about that negative time in life. But if we do thoughtfully consider that precious time in our life, we can make it a better time, because no decision is a decision that somebody else is going to take over and care for you in ways you may never have wanted. And we see it every day in every hospital. People are there on machines, tubes being tested, and their family says they never would have wanted this. but they didn't talk about it. Right. They didn't write it down. They didn't do an advance directive or pulsed. Yeah, Dr. Bagatelle is a good friend of mine. I just hope he could say the same thing about me. but he is a terrific guy and a strong advocate for pulsed in the state. You're absolutely right. He's an expert.
So you mentioned something that's really important, because there's a new initiative here locally that is not a national movement, which is called, you told me about it, We Need to Talk Soon. Why aren't people talking? How do we get people to talk?
You know, there are many of these projects around the country. The Conversation Project is a national project, and there is the Dinner Conversation. And at Thanksgiving, when families get together, there is this story about, before we pass the cranberries, everybody needs to tell us, if you got really sick, what would you want? You can tell us anything. They said, well, that's not dinner conversation, but the families together in a loving community, tell us what you would want if you got seriously ill. A wonderful guy here in Palm Beach County. His name is Charlie Ring. I want to call him out. He is an advocate for Let's Talk Soon. And he is advocating, hey, talk about anything you want to. Talk about what your hopes and your wishes are. But let's talk about what the facts are. And then it comes the same conversation. If you got seriously ill, what would you want? What would you not want? And how can you do that? And this fella is really moving that along in church basements, in synagogues, in community centers. I've run into him a couple of times, and he is an advocate for what you would want for your care.
You know, I can relate so clearly to this conversation. I maybe have mentioned this on the show a couple of times, but my father died in Las Vegas. And he was buried in Las Vegas, there were very few people. He was the youngest of 25 years younger than his oldest brother, and so most of his family was long gone, and they certainly didn't live out there. When he passed away, I went to the funeral home. I was there. He was in hospice. He was in residential hospice. It was a little bit like Hanukkah. He was given one day to live, and he lasted 6 days. And finally, his wife said, if you don't die tonight, Donald, I'm going to kill you. But anyway, the truth is we went to the funeral home. We made all the arrangements. And being Jewish, the tradition is plain pine box. My father was a lot of things, but he wasn't a plain pine box guy. So I did what any self-respecting son would do. I went and I plopped down $5,000 on the most beautiful casket you ever did see, that everybody only did see for about 30 seconds because we had a graveside funeral. And I put him in the ground in this beautiful casket, which I paid for. And in hindsight, I realized that I have no idea what he wanted, that he very much may have really wanted that plain pine box. His wife didn't know, because they never had that conversation. I didn't know. My sisters didn't know. None of us knew what he wanted. And so what I ended up doing was doing what I wanted, which in hindsight, I thought I was doing the right thing. It was a selfish move. We need to talk to each other about these important issues.
Well, first of all, you did do the right thing. You did the best thing you could with the knowledge you had, and you were a good son.
True.
So first of all, you did the right thing.
Thank you.
The second part of that, the let's talk, we should talk.
Right.
And let's talk soon, because we never know what tomorrow will bring. So we can't wait until we can't talk to be asked what we would want. And I guess your father's story proves the saying.
Right.
What happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas.
Well, that's certainly true. If you just tuned in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I've been here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. He is a very special advocate for those of us who are aging, which frankly includes all of us, because we are a little older tomorrow than we were today. He is, in his primary role, the Chief Medical Officer of Palliative Medicine at Trustbridge Health. He was formerly Chief Medical Officer at Hospice by the Sea. He is the immediate past president of the Florida Medical Directors Association. He has done so much more that we have not yet talked about. If you're sorry that you missed the show, I have good news for you. You can listen to it, because we podcast. It will be up and running tomorrow on OMG I'm Getting, on all the platforms, podcast platforms. But if you are like me and not a podcaster, we also put it up on my website, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. Comfortcare, C-O-M-F-O-R-C-A-R-E.com. Don't put a T in there. I know you want to. Don't do it. It won't get to us. Of course, if you don't have a radio, there is no excuse because you do have a smartphone. And there is an app for that called TuneIn Radio. All you have to do is look for WSVU, and you will find us. We're live every Monday at 6 o'clock, and you can just do that. And, of course, we do simulcast, www.trueoldiesfla.com. TrueOldiesFLA.com. We do that locally, nationally, and around the world. Next week, we're going to talk about a program near and dear to my heart, having nothing to do with anything I really do on a day-to-day basis. We're going to talk about the Guardian Ad Litem program. Guardian Ad Litem is a program that takes care of children, children in need, children who need advocates. It is a completely volunteer program, has nothing to do with the professional volunteer, I mean the professional guardian community. It is entirely different. Ken Gottlieb is going to be here. Ken is a wonderful advocate. He's been on, been an employee of the Guardian Ad Litem program or the state that runs that. He's fascinating, and you're not going to want to miss that. And who knows, you may want to get involved. In 2 weeks, a very, very special guest, Dr. Ali Malik will be here. Dr. Malik is probably the area's foremost expert on strokes, and that is, in fact, what he specializes in. He's at St. Mary's Hospital. Strokes are so important, and time matters. Time is brain. He's going to explain that to you. Hopefully, you'll never need to meet him, but if you do, you'll be glad that you did, because he is that good at what he does. But more importantly, he is going to tell you the signs of stroke, how to avoid stroke, and what to do if you think you're having a stroke. And it's really, really important. So in 2 weeks, Dr. Ali Malik. But in the minute or two that I have left, Dr. Hawk, I could go on forever. But is there something in particular that you feel really strongly that you'd like the audience to know?
You know, I think it is making good choices for yourself, so that the peak of our lives, from probably age 30 when we're developed and mature, you know, 100 years ago, the average age in this country was about 50. We matured, we worked hard, and because of workplace safety, because of illnesses, lack of antibiotics and vaccinations, we only lived to about 50. Today, we mature and become optimal in our 30s, and to hang on to that high quality performance, and that is aging successfully, taking up golf when we're 75, not retiring, not because we have to retire, but not retiring until we're later because we love the work we do. So we are getting older, and thinking about how we live the golden years and then how we live the precious weeks and months toward our last breath. It is so important, I think, and I advocate for people making their choices. It doesn't have to be my choice. It never should be, except for me. It should be their choice, and then you should find an advocate, someone who says, that's what this person wants. They're living by their values. They're living the way they want, whether it's pulsed, palliative care, hospice, or care in their home, they should have it the way they want it.
No, that is so true. We often make decisions at times of crisis that are rarely the decisions we would make if we had the time to think about what we really want. So what you're advocating for is to be proactive about how you want to live the rest of your life, not
exactly
be a victim.
Making a quality decision, not a decision in the midst of emotional chaos.
I can't thank you enough for being here tonight.
My pleasure.
Dr. Hawk, you are always a breath of fresh air, and you give wonderful information, and you're really an important guest, and I promise not to wait 6 years for you to come back. If you'll be back, I will have you. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. We are coming to the end of the show, where my guest, Dr. Leonard Hawk from Trustbridge Health, has been here. It's a fascinating show, not so much about dying as it is about living the rest of your life the way that you want to. Of course, this show, Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom, is all about those kinds of decisions. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. We talk about issues that you should be talking about in a proactive, meaningful way to help you get where you want to get to, in the way that you want to get there. So If you're regular, you know that we're here Monday nights at 6 o'clock on 95.9 FM, True Oldies, Florida, on the Treasure Coast. It's 106.9 FM. On Long Island, 103.9 FM. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Guardian Ad Litem program, about how you can get active in helping children navigate the difficult waters that they had no input into having entered. And so that's something that you can do, a great volunteer program. But also, we'll explain how the program helps those kids in needs. We're here every Monday. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I look forward to seeing you next week. Again, Dr. Hawk, thank you. And have a great night, everybody, and a great week. Good night.